What's up, everybody? This is episode 3 of Lunch in the Band Room. This is going to be a solo episode because, quite frankly, it's pretty hard to get all of us in one room. But I just want to be here to say hi, say Happy New Year, because I think that's when I'm going to be posting this. Don't mind the Christmas lights behind me for the people who are not watching the video on YouTube. But I thought I'd just come on here and share some of the, I guess, cheat codes that you could call them that I've learned through going through band, through all of my schooling and 4 years of college as a music major. And just looking back, hopefully this will help any of you like still in middle school, high school, or like looking like, do I major in music in college or what path should I go down? I don't have all those answers. Quite frankly, I'm still figuring out so many of those things myself, but I thought I'd share the things that I feel like are more apparent to me now that I'm past those parts of my life. And I'm sure in 10 years, I'll feel much differently about these things, or maybe not, you know, or I'll have more revelations about this time in my life right now. But I thought I'd just run through, see if things come to me, but I definitely have some milestone markers of things that I am so thankful happened for me and things that made my life as a musician easier. Skills that I didn't think at the time I needed or were annoyed with that ended up making so many other things easier in the long run. So let's start off easy. First of all, we did not have a music program in our elementary school. So my brother and I, besides piano with our grandma, which first cheat code, take piano lessons. You do not have to be good. You do not have to take them for a long time. But I can tell you, us being able to read both clefs, bass and treble, tremendous help, especially as writers. You know, my brother and I took piano with my grandma from about, I don't know, ages five, six, or seven, probably, till high school when, like, you know, at the time I was like, I do not have time to practice. And, you know, high school, especially in the arts, is very busy. So I took it about up until then. So I call that about 8 years, 7 years of piano. And then for myself, I chose piano as my applied instrument, which when you're a composer or a composing major at universities, you have to choose an instrument that you will be taking private lessons with, or they're giving you your scholarship with, or something like that, because composers technically, you know, that's quote unquote not an instrument. So you choose something. I chose piano. I still think is one of the most helpful tools, and I'm sure almost every musician, you know, over the age of 21 in the world would probably agree with that in terms of just like bass knowledge, but. Back to middle school. So aside from piano that my brother and I both took from our grandma, shout out, we started our separate instruments in elementary school. And it's kind of funny how we ended up doing the instruments, because a big part of band is getting an instrument. Instruments are stupid expensive. So of course, as we would have been doing if our parents weren't also in band in college and in high school themselves, people usually rent instruments. One piece of knowledge I can tell you, do not rent until you buy. It is not a sustainable program for the person who's actually renting it. I had someone do that, and quite a few people do that, and you just end up paying like double or triple the price by the time you pay it off. It's better to save or to rent for short periods of times. Yeah, so that's just probably better. Just beware of those. I have some friends who did that with their saxophones, even just altos, even like beginning altos, and they ended up paying probably double the price at the end of like 2 years or 3 years or however long they rented until they bought. So I used my dad's old alto saxophone that he played in, I think, high school. I think he also played in high school and college. And then my grandpa also played. So it's a multi-generational alto saxophone, a con, C-O-N-N, for people who know, you know, saxophone brands and other instrument brands. So my parents, for me, My dad said, well, we have a trombone from your mom because she played trombone and an alto sax for me. So choose which one you want to do. So I said, oh, okay. I guess I'll play the saxophone. I took the saxophone. 2 years later, they said the same thing to my brother, but they said, that we only have a trombone. And he said, okay, I'm going to play trombone. So that's, you know, we were lucky in that regard that our parents had saved their college instruments. And of course, as you keep going, especially if you play for a long time, you usually do end up investing in other instruments or, you know, fixing up those instruments. That's a big thing I'll talk about as well. But honestly, if you can find an old instrument at, from a friend or from a yard sale or from a thrift shop, those end up usually being really good. I got a trumpet from my grandparents that they literally kept as a decoration. Like, it came in the thrift shop or something, and it was just on one of their dressers. And I saw it, and it had been there for like, you know, 15 years. And I was like, hey, I was kind of considering playing trumpet in marching band. Like, is this a working trumpet? They're like, I think so. You know, we've just had it on this dresser. And guess what? It was. Is it the best trumpet in the world? No, but that is not, you don't need the best instrument in the world to, you know, work on your musicianship. There are times when the quality of your instrument can severely hinder yourself and make you doubt yourself, but a lot of times it's easy to blame the instrument when the problem ends up being you. So, sixth grade, I'm playing this really old alto saxophone in beginning band, and I can't get in the low notes, and all my other peers were able to play the low notes, and I was just thinking, like, man, okay, I'm slacking already. You know, 3 months into this, I can't play low B flats or Bs or Cs. I don't know what's happening. So then, eventually, that happened enough that we took it to the repair shop. Shout out to Pedersen's. And he said, oh my gosh, all your pads are split. They're completely, you know, broken, which, you know, if you don't know, there's pads underneath all the buttons in a saxophone. So they were all cut, which meant it was not making an airtight seal, which is why I was not hitting the lowest notes because all the air was leaking out. So he said, we're going to have to repad the whole thing. I didn't really know what that means as a, you know, 11-year-old. I was like, okay. And they did it. I got it back. It was like a magic saxophone. That was one of the only instances in my life where it was actually the instrument that was the problem. Because then I was playing low notes. I could play them softly. I was like, hallelujah, you know. So that's the thing you risk with old instruments is you probably should get them checked out. And I don't really have a good grasp on pricings for instrument fixes, but they often end up not being as expensive as I think about it, because you think like, oh my gosh, I can't afford to have them redo my whole thing or fix all my corks or all this stuff, because, you know, it can be expensive, but it's always good. You should always go get like a price, like for them to check it. Let me make sure this camera is still recording. Oh, heck yeah. You should always go in to check what it like will be. What do they call that? They call it I can't think of it right now. That's the only downside to doing a solo video. But like an offer. So they'll say, we can fix this cork, or they can say, that's actually not a problem. This one is, we can fix this, $50. You know, maybe we just had a really awesome band store, because there was one time we came in and my mom and I were like, oh no, this might be a big fix. And he's like, I could do this for $20. And we're like, okay, great. So always go check it. It's better than just like toughing it out and like letting that hurt your band experience. It gets a little more complicated when you're renting from schools, because oftentimes the schools have to send it in. But always talk to your band director, because I know with ours, I had friends who were using the school instruments just borrowing the school's instruments. And sometimes he would say, you know, go fix it and then give me the receipt. So, you know, it will be reimbursed and stuff like that. So that's always like, ask your band director, and hopefully your band director's on top of getting those things fixed, which oftentimes they got deals with those band stores and they get them all fixed at the end of the year, all this stuff. How do we get here? I don't really know. But so I had that saxophone, played that through all of 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. I did beginning band and jazz band. Started that end of sixth grade, which was absolutely a blast. Lots of alto two, holding it down on the alto two part. And then I think it was the end of sixth grade, the church I was playing at every weekend had a Barry sax, and they had no one who wanted to play it. So I was like, whoa, you know, with a saxophone as tall as me. I have a picture. It's kind of funny. So I ended up playing that. I had nowhere near like the lung capacity to play that large of an instrument. But that started my love for Barry sax as the main, you know, Barry sax player of Lion Bros. So I played that a little bit off and on while we were at that church from sixth to eighth grade. And then we moved churches and the Barry sax stayed there. But they rented till they bought. They ended up paying something like $10,000 for a like, I think it's a $5,000 or $6,000 Barry. So that's where they get you, unfortunately. Just fixing my in ear. So then we left the church. I go to high school. I'm playing alto sax in the marching band and learning marching, which I loved, which was super duper fun. Loved band camp and all that jazz. And then I think we were in the concert band, and of course, I'm sure this is the case with many of your schools, so many alto saxophones. It's like anybody who joins is like, ooh, the saxophone's cool. I want to play it because it is cool, but holy cow, holy moly, someone has to stop the amount of alto saxophones allowed in a band because there were way too many. We had like 15 or something like that, just so many, and I was like, you know what? Like, I want to be in a, you know, At the time, I was like, I want to feel like more like I have my own part. Like, I want to be in a smaller section. So I said, hey, can I play Barry sax? And this is actually when I started playing it consistently. I think it was my sophomore year of high school. And my band director was like, yeah, do you have a Barry sax? And I was like, no. And he said, we don't have one available. There were two Barry players at the time. And they were both seniors. And I was like, ooh, I want to be in their section. You know, I want to be cool, be a Barry saxophone. So I asked my dad, and he ended up calling that church we were at, and he said, hey, do you still have that Barry sax? And I said, no one's played it since you left. And then he said, could we possibly buy it from you? We got an absolute steal. I ended up helping pay for it because they were like, we're not going to buy this whole instrument for you. I was like, very fair, very fair. So I saved up, and I think we like split it. Like, I paid half of it and we bought that Barry sax, and that is still the Barry sax I use to date. Has served me so well through all of high school, all of college, and now. So every Lion Bros video you see my Selmer Barry sax. He's gone through quite a bit. I believe in high school his name was Axel the Saxel. That may have been my alto sax. Oh, you know what? No. I think it was Gary the Barry. I think that's what it was. But that has served me so well. Sophomore year, Barry sax, concert band. And then I auditioned I was currently in jazz band as alto too. And then I auditioned for jazz band again on Barry, and I played Barry sax, which I absolutely adore playing in a big band setting. As the Barry sax. I love holding it down. Love holding it down with the bass trombone and the bassist. It's just, those parts are super duper fun. And that's basically all I do in Lion Bros is play like the bass part. So I really enjoy, that's like where that comes from, is me playing it in jazz band and doing all that fun stuff. If you ever see me look at my watch, it's actually me looking at the camera because I can check it, which is honestly, I feel like a super spy. So I played Barry through the rest of high school, but my freaking band teacher did not. He had just a vendetta against marching Barrys. Honestly, at a certain point, he just wanted to not have Barrys. Like, I asked enough, he was probably just saying no because he's like, I can't back down now. So that is actually when I started learning trumpet just for the fun of it. Same reason. I didn't want to play in our 15 person alto sax section, and I wanted to break into brass for the first time. And this is what I did. I would not maybe suggest it for everybody, but this is how I stayed playing trumpet. It was sophomore year when I got my Barry, and then he said, no, you can't play Barry. I was like, oh, I can't go back to alto. I can't do it. So then I said, okay, I'm going to play trumpet because we don't have a ton of trumpets. I'm going to play trumpet 3. I'm not going to be the best trumpet in the world, but I know I can read pretty well, and I know I can play out, and I'm not afraid to be wrong and strong, as our band teacher would teach us. Loud and proud, wrong and strong. But I also knew it was going to kick my butt, because you brass players, that's some hard stuff. You know, playing a brass instrument is just such a different set of skills from woodwinds, which is the world I started in and stayed in for so long. So I knew, dude, you're going to get so discouraged. You're going to want to quit. You're going to want to go back to alto sax. And I was determined not to go back to alto sax. So what I did at the time, I said, you know what? I'm going to, what was it? I think it was a Bach 3C, I believe. And it's the one I still have. I was like, I'm going to invest. You know, it's like $50. But I was like, I'm going to invest, maybe 40, in this Bach 3C so that I can't quit. Like, I already spent money on the mouthpiece, so I won't quit when it's stupid and freaking hard. And it was stupid and freaking hard. But because I had bought that mouthpiece, I didn't back out of it. And I played trumpet for 3 years of marching band. So every marching season, I would play first semester and get to hang out with the trumpets. And I ended up, you know, leading our, like, helping lead sectionals. Because Alfonso, we went to school together, as you guys all know. He was obviously the best trumpet ever, and, you know, at our school, but he just did not have time for marching band his senior year. And it was a big to do because it was kind of like you had to be a marching band. But he talked to our teacher. He said, listen, you know, I want to do trumpet professionally and I want to pursue it for college auditions and stuff. And he, you know, I don't want to be a marching band. That's too much time. And our band director let him not do it. So that kind of left a hole, because then I was the last senior trumpet and I'm not even a main trumpet player. So I kind of like helped be like section leader, but not as like the principal trumpet player, obviously. So I like led that with Mariana, shout out Mariana. And she was a junior, and then we kind of like helped facilitate all that, you know, as Alfonso was practicing and, you know, taking time away from marching band. But the year before that, we actually led that together. I think it was Red Team all through marching band. Alfonso and I were co-leading Red Team. And like that, I look back at that as like some of the most fun I had with Alfonso, was like leading that group with him, the trumpets. And he would give me really good tips, and of course, and helped me, and he knew I wasn't a trumpet player. I was just challenging myself. So yeah, some of the most fun I had in band with, you know, Alfonso, like one-on-one, I guess, was like leading that group with him. So, marching band was great. That's when I played trumpet. And, then right before college, my parents were like, hey, you know, oboes and bassoonists usually get pretty big scholarships. You should learn oboe. And I was like, okay, why not? Let's game the system. Spoiler alert, did not game the system. I got probably the same amount I would have gotten at my college. It did not make a significant difference. But hey, now I got oboe under my belt. So I took oboe for a year and took private lessons outside of school. And I was like, ooh, I'm going to practice. And I really enjoy oboe. I think that was one of the instruments that maybe one of my favorites, just because of the challenge. Oh my gosh, if this wasn't recording, I would be so sad. Maybe one of my favorites, just because of so many oboes, at least in high school band and middle school band, are like, you know, not the most pleasant sounding, because we're all learning, obviously, and I probably wasn't the most pleasant sounding either, you know, but like going into it saying like, you know, the stereotype of oboes is not the best, and I want to be, just make such a beautiful oboe sound. So I really, really enjoyed fighting intonation and like trying to like make these beautiful lines. And we've talked about it a little bit on the channel, but we got to play with Don Williams. He had a program called Musicians at Play, and he would come to a few of the schools in our area, and then we'd do a group concert playing lots of John Williams pieces, but they'd bring professional instrumentalists who played on these scores, and they would come in and like teach us. They do little sectionals. So I played oboe for that, and it was a big deal. No one knew I played oboe. I wasn't secretly taking lessons, but that was just not the instrument that I was doing in school. So I like played in that sectional, and that was really special. I got to play some John Williams pieces on oboe, and it was so hard. But I think her name was Claire. She was the professional oboist that came in, and I still follow her on Instagram from then, and she's wicked. She's so good. I can't think of her Instagram username though, but she, you know, played on all these scores and film scores, and that was also a really cool opportunity. That was just by location. That was just like, we were blessed to have Don Williams there doing this like volunteer program. I realize I said I was going to talk about cheat codes, and then I'm kind of just running through my life story. So let's think back to some cheat codes. Piano's a cheat code. Even if you are sitting there right now and you are 18 years old, or you are 25, or you are 30 or 40 or 50, you know, learning piano has never been more available to people, because it used to be you need to get a teacher. Of course, getting a teacher is great. I'm not saying don't do that. But if you can't do that, or you don't have the time, or you frankly do not care enough about piano, YouTube. What is it? Musically or whatever. Like all these, like You Piano, My Piano. Like so many apps, so many videos that are at our disposal for learning piano. I still count piano as one of my like most useful skills in probably all facets of my musicianship, whether that's writing, whether that's learning new instruments, knowing how to read new instruments. I already said writing, but I'm going to say it again because that's a big thing. That's a big thing. When you're going through school, you can definitely tell when people don't know how to play piano, because it kind of translates to parts where it's like, this is not possible for any person alive or dead to play, you know? So like, I think learning piano is so, so valuable. So that would be like my number one cheat code, is even just taking just a little bit of piano. And it may feel dumb, but I promise it's so useful. That's something I'm so thankful for. Another thing I'm thankful for are the situations I was put in where I sight read like a madman. And at the time, it was so scary. It was so, so scary. But the only way to get better at sight reading is to just do it. And I know people say that all the time, but I can tell you from firsthand experience, you just got to do it. From sixth grade, I started playing in our church orchestra. I was not qualified to play at all. I was far from qualified. I like had learned two scales like a month ago, like B flat and concert C. Like that's really was the extent. But I was just going through, even if I played two notes every service, you know, I was like still slowly building up sight reading skills. And those 3 years of playing that every single weekend and throwing myself into like difficult music, I saw so many pieces of music that influenced anything I played after that. Whether you're talking about music terms like fermatas or segue, that's S-E-G-U-E, like all these terms that I saw, or articulations that would then show up in high school band, and people would be like, what does tacit mean? And I'm like, I saw that. I didn't know what it meant then either, but like I exposed myself brutally to so much sheet music that I could not play at all. But I just, you know, trial by fire truly is the best way to get better at sight reading. So like a modern application of that now could be just looking up free music for your instrument. MuseScore, It's half and half. You're either going to see really bad sheet music or some randomly really good sheet music. But honestly, it doesn't matter. If you're just sight reading a melody and you're doing terribly, that's good because you're working up to it. So honestly, I would put yourself, if you want to buy a real book, even if you're not a jazz player, there are just lots of melodies in there and you can flip through 500 pieces and just read melodies. You could get an old hymn book that will have 1,000 hymns in it and read the soprano line or read the bass line if you're reading bass clef and just play it on your instrument. Honestly, if you do that, if you read 2 hymns a day or 2 real book pieces a day or even just a week, you're going to get so exponentially better at sight reading so much quicker than people around you. Because if you're just sight reading in class, which you only sight read so much, you get your pieces for the semester or for the concert and you sight read those, but then you practice them and then you play the same things over and over again. If you end up doing that, you are going to become a beast at sight reading and kind of just surpass everyone else who is not doing that, which is also fine. You don't have to do that. But if you want to gain that skill and want to like accumulate more knowledge about music quicker, honestly, I kind of count sight reading and just getting your eyes on pieces of music as the best way to get better as a musician, because you're exposing yourself to pieces you may have never listened to or never played or never seen, and you're just grabbing that and adding certain things to your vocabulary that you may not even know yet. And that's like honestly a huge thing about being a writer and stuff like that, is like so much of your upbringing gives you vocabulary that you don't know you're being given. Like it's just the subconscious, like being a sponge. Like people talk about that, like being a sponge with music and, you know, pieces of work and like reading and stuff like that. Like just being a sponge, like you are such a special sponge, I guess, you know, because no one has had the same exact experiences as you, which is so cool. Like my brother and I, we're completely different musicians, even though arguably we've been through most of the same beat for beat things, same ensembles, same schools, same colleges, you know, all that jazz, but we're completely different. And that's because along the way, our tastes are different and we're choosing to listen to different things. Noah loves rap. I love theater. Like, you know, like all these things are just from what we're just absorbing throughout our lives, even when you have a sibling that's living like a very similar life to you. And that's one of the things I love about music and I think is so fascinating. There are so many tangents in this. I hope this is like landing for at least somebody, or you're having an interesting time listening to this. But I'm just like reflecting on my life as a musician. These were the hot takes. Let me just like put my leg out for a second. Hope it doesn't look like, oh no, this is great. Okay. So I just gotta, stretch. I do not crisscross applesauce very often, but this will have to do. Cheat codes, piano, sight reading, trial by fire. And honestly, if you ever want to write music for any instrument that's not your main instrument, I would suggest picking up that instrument. You do not have to be good. I think that is the worst like myth or lie in band or school or anything or in life, is that you have to be good at the instrument you're picking up. You don't have to at all. I played clarinet. I was not good. I played it for maybe 3 months and then maybe like 2 weeks kind of recently. I was not good, but I learned so much about clarinet and now I can write for clarinet better. I did not have to become a protege on clarinet, or I didn't have to put in my 10,000 hours on clarinet, but that because I like even not, oh my gosh, even though I didn't do those things, even though I didn't become a pro, even though I didn't put my all into clarinet, that doesn't like invalidate the experience I had on that clarinet, because I still count them as invaluable. There's plenty of instruments that I've played that I count as like instruments I can play, even though like I can't really play them. I could play them more than someone coming up off the street, you know, in a street interview saying like, oh, play this trumpet. Oh, no, like I can play a trumpet. Am I the best trumpet in the world? No. Am I ever going to be? Do I ever want to be? No. But I've learned so much just from the process of learning that instrument and not being the best at it. I think it's super harmful. And it's not something that's explicitly said. I think it's just something in school with you wanting to be good at things, you know, and not wanting to like fail at things. You think like, oh, things I pursue, I need to be amazingly good at it and quick. That's never going to happen. I mean, like it's never that easy. And I think sometimes that's what puts people off about playing multiple instruments. But as someone who considers themselves a multi-instrumentalist and, you know, has like played all of Hamilton on 10 instruments and like all these things, like, you know, I would count maybe three of those instruments my main instruments. The other ones are just fun. You know, I enjoy pulling out a clarinet, playing some notes. Is it my favorite instrument in the world? No. Am I particularly very good at it? Also, no. But I enjoy it. You know, I haven't played oboe in, you know, 2 or 3 years, but I still enjoy it. And I enjoy all the lessons that I took on it. And when I did play it in college and in studio orchestra as principal oboist, I still count those as very, you know, valuable times of my, and very valuable moments of my journey as a musician and especially as a writer. So let's go back to that. If you ever want to write music, your knowledge of music as a whole will be so broadened by playing instruments outside of your main instrument. When you play piano, you have a pretty good start. Same with guitar. I don't think you do as much reading on guitar, which sometimes, you know, doesn't give like the full benefit of playing a chordal instrument and like being able to read both clefs like pianists can and kind of understanding how things may lay in an orchestra. I don't think guitarists get as many benefits since they're playing with one hand as opposed to two, but learning instruments just so far elevates like even your subconscious understanding of sound and like pleasant sounds to your ear, you know, because a lot of times people are writing music and a lot of times I was writing music, I didn't know why it sounded good, but I knew it did. And I knew to trust my ear on that. So my first composition professor in college, he was saying, you do a lot of things instinctively. And basically what I'm trying to do right now is tell you why those things work, which is super useful because I was just looking for sounds and being like, oh, that's cool. And, you know, little did I know, it was like a flat seven, you know, or whatever, or it was a dominant chord, like all those things. I didn't have to understand those to create those. And that's the argument for like the Beatles didn't know music theory and they wrote some of the best music. Yeah. Like you don't have to know music theory or any of these things, but having those tools under your belt do make the process easier and they do fill in some question marks in your mind. You know, if you know what tools you have in your toolbox, the process of building something is exponentially easier for you. Because I can think back to the times I was writing those things and I didn't really understand. And it was a lot of experimenting, but I don't know if you always want to be in a state of experimentation, because that can get frustrating as a creative. If you have the idea up here and you're like, I can't comprehend how to like execute it correctly on the paper, on the computer, you know, or whatever it is. So like sometimes I found that like being in a constant state of experimentation and like not understanding certain rules and why I don't like a sound over another, that can be frustrating and tiring and sometimes, you know, discourage you from writing. So that's why I found music theory and, you know, studying other songs or just being a sponge, just listening to stuff without analyzing it. I found that super duper helpful and relaxing on like my stress level when I'm writing and creating. But with that being said, you do not need to write good stuff. I think that's another thing that you feel like you need to do. And it goes along with on the same lines as the instrumentalists thinking that, you know, you need to be good at something right away. Mm-mm. I had a SoundCloud. I had a YouTube. I was posting these things, which I think is a, you know, there was a great sense of like pride and ownership over the things I was creating. But they were far from the best things in the world. But I look back on them fondly because I was like, wow, look where I started. Look at this little piece that I named after my hometown and wrote basically a 12-bar blues. I thought it was like breaking like boundaries and walls at the time. I was like, wow, look what I've created. But like some of those little things can be very exciting when you're starting out. But if I had gone, this isn't good, I don't know if I would have continued past that point. So I think it is very good to believe in the stuff you're writing and believe that it's good, even if in 6 months you listen back and you go, wow, that was not my best work. It probably wasn't, because you're constantly growing. You know, like you will never, like I don't think I will ever look back on something and be fully content with it, because, you know, you'll always be super self-critical and like, you know, always analyzing. Maybe that's a problem. You know, honestly, maybe that's a problem for me. But most times I can look back and look at these little songs or little demos I posted or produced or stuff, and I can look at it and be like, wow, what a like snapshot in time of my skills at that point for me to be like, this is the best showing of my skills right now. But my best showing of my skills are going to get way cooler and better as I learn, which, you know, is what I love about the process. All that to say, if you want to write, if you want to compose, if you want to arrange, if you want to produce, if you want to write raps, all that, just do it. Just do it. Get GarageBand. It's free. Get, I was going to say FL Studio or like all those things. I don't think those are free, but just get a DAW, which is a digital audio workspace. Get one of those and just mess around. Throw some loops in. It does not have to be original. It can be a cover. Like, don't let those things stop you. Copyright does not apply just on your freaking computer. You know, don't worry about those things until you're like posting or like trying to monetize. You know, like, don't let that stop you. If you end up writing something that sounds exactly like Espresso, who cares? You know, like that's still like, you know, that's honestly part of the process. I've written many songs that exist, and there's a guy, I think Daniel Thrasher on TikTok, who like makes memes out of that when you like write songs that exist. But like, that's gonna happen. You know, it takes a long time to like, I guess, oh gosh, to be like philosophical, like find your sound, you know, and be able to navigate between things that already exist and to know, because, you know, oh, it's a larger conversation of like, you know, everything created, like nothing's ever an original thought because, you know, it's all based off of something before. It's always inspired by something else. So like, that's a conversation for another day. But if you end up copying other songs, just keep doing it. You know, keep it, all of it are steps towards getting slightly better at the thing that you want to do. And even if you don't want to do it, it just is fun. GarageBand is fun on an iPad, on a phone, on a computer. You know, I don't know the Windows equivalent if you don't have an Apple product. So I'm actually at a loss for there. I don't have anything to offer at that point, which I apologize for, but just try it. You know, like people always say, like, you got to write 9 bad songs to write the 1 good song. And honestly, that's kind of true. You're not going to know those 9 songs are bad, at least in my experience. You're going to think every song's good, and then you're going to get past it. You're going to be like, okay, but this song's a banger. You know, like I wrote all those songs and then this one, and I get it. What is it? I understand it now. So like that adage, I guess, or that saying is super true. You know, you gotta write all the songs. Just write. Excuse me. If that's what you want to do, just do it. you know, do it shamelessly. And in terms of like being in like this age of social media, just post things. You never know when something will do well. And even if it doesn't, it doesn't matter. Like, even if something does poorly, all it means is people didn't see it. So people aren't seeing it do poorly, if that makes sense. That's what like my thought was posting on TikTok. It was like, listen, if it flops, if it gets 10 views, two people like it, no one saw it. So why would I be embarrassed that it flopped? Because the point of it not doing well is that people didn't see it. So you just try again. You just keep going. I love seeing new music accounts and, you know, people making music accounts for their instruments. And like we were just followed on Line Bros by, you know, two separate flute accounts that look like they just started and they're posting covers. And I just think that's so cool. And that's like just what you got to do. You know, you just write. Practice, post. Like, we're in such a cool time. I mean, there are downsides, of course, to social media, but like, it's such a cool opportunity to share the thing you like doing, the thing I'm doing right now, the thing that Lion Bros does. Like that, like, we're so lucky to have had that frickin' Fortnite Dances Part 1, Fortnite Dances played by Band Kids, do so well, so that we could get to this point now. How crazy is that? So like, I'm endlessly grateful for all of that, especially like my personal, you know, social media, which RIP TikTok, going down pretty soon. That's where I have the most people for my series Singing Through the MCU. Shout out. But you know, we're just in a special time with Instagram and YouTube and TikTok for just a little bit longer to be able to share your art in such a cool way. It can be discouraging. I'd love to sit here and tell you, don't worry about the numbers. It's not a reflection on your musicianship. And I wish I could, like, I am going to tell you that. I wish I could believe that fully, because it still affects me as it does anybody. There is a very, very successful musician on YouTube that I have followed for years, and I'm a huge fan of them, and we're actually mutuals. And you know, we were talking about YouTube the other day, and we were talking about how it tells you, it says like rank 1 out of 10, like it tells you out of your 10 previous videos, this is doing the best, the fastest, and all that stuff. And so exciting when you have a 1 out of 10, of course. And he says, but it's so discouraging when it's not 1 out of 10. And, you know, or said like, you know, it doesn't always help my mental health when that happens and stuff like that. And at that moment, I was like, whoa, I was like, this person who is like, I see is so wildly successful and so like good at what they do, like they are also discouraged by the numbers. So it's like, it's easy to sit here and tell you like, just post, don't worry about it not being seen. Cause I do truly believe that. It's easy to say that, but it's hard to implement it. So like, that's something I'm working on with everybody else in the whole wide world, because it's like how everybody feels. But yeah, I mean, I think that's most what I've wanted to say. My knees are kind of giving out sitting in crisscross applesauce on my bed for everybody listening. But if you have any questions, thank you for listening to me yap. I am a yapper. I'm a certified yapper, and my girlfriend can tell you. And honestly, anybody who knows me can tell you, because I just, I send lots of voice memos and I prefer that over texting. But man, the voice memo updates to my girlfriend go crazy. They go crazy for sure. Yeah, thanks for sticking around for the yap. If you have any questions, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I want to touch down on at the end of this solo episode. I don't think there is. Just to give you a heads up, the vision for this podcast is really to be here to answer your questions. Anything you want to know about, honestly. Like, I think one of my main like passions for Lion Bros is like just being able to be a resource for people currently in band or people who want to join band or want to join music. Like, even if you're not in school, even if you're not college aged or high school aged, you know, even if you're an adult or like, you know, whatever. Like, I love being a resource for anyone who needs it and wants it. And, you know, showing you like, hey, like, music's pretty awesome. Like, yeah, you know, band kids are nerds. I'm a nerd. Someone was asking me, I'm not going to name drop them, but someone was talking to me and asking me some questions, you know, about certain things. I don't think they'll listen to this, but I'm still not going to name drop them. And I said, hey, you should check out this other YouTuber. That's a really great YouTuber. And they said, oh, he kind of seems like a nerd. And I was like, what do you think we're talking about right now? Like, you and I, we are music nerds. Like, that's what we're doing right now. And it just made me laugh because, like, we're all nerds. Like, that's the joy of it. And, you know, part of Lion Bros is being like, hey, band is a pretty fun thing to do with your friends and at school and outside of school and in your free time. Like, it's just a fun, you know, way to hang out and way to express yourself, which is, I think, the way that I think I can speak for most of Lion Bros, saying that's the way we think about it. You know, we show up to like make you cool videos, but also like we're just laughing and having a good time for, you know, 4 or 5 hours filming that. So like those days can be exhausting, but they're so fun. And I love going back and I, you know, I edit everything and I put everything together so I get to see and like make the bloopers. And I'm just like laughing my butt off after the fact editing because it's just a fun time. It's just like, oh, band is great. I love band. It's so great. I'm going to eat some dinner. Speaking of lunch in the band room, the name of the podcast, I am going to go make myself some dinner now, given that it's nighttime. But happy holidays to everybody. I think I'm putting this out probably at the end of the year or in the new year. So if it is in the new year, happy new year, 2025. Crazy, huh? Wow. Who would have thunk? But in terms of this podcast, any questions, anything, honestly, I'm looking to get some of my friends. I've gotten a lot of music mutuals over the past 3-4 years, and I'm looking to get some of them on the podcast, on Zoom, and, you know, interview them. So if you have anybody you'd want to see or want to hear an interview from, also drop that in the comments. If you're listening on Spotify, you can comment there too. Or if you're watching on YouTube, comment there as well. Yeah, but this is just a fun podcast to spread some knowledge and spread some love for music from some people who like doing it. yeah. I think that's all I have to say. Thank you if you are listening. Please, I guess, comment on Spotify. I don't even know how the Spotify algorithm works, but please listen or save it, or I don't really know. But I'm going to play you guys out with some jazzy music. Let me see if I can find the button. Oh, no. Well, there's a longer one. Here we go. Okay, peace out.